And I think what he would say is that so many, like, it's become so fashionable in Britain, and this is where his instability thing comes in, that no, pretty much nobody anymore, even though 20 years ago, sort of jingoistic imperialism was super common among the intelligentsia. When he's writing, like, in the middle of World War II, basically, I believe, that's become very unfashionable. And
passé, yeah.
And so people, you know, they can't form a sort of healthy relationship with their actual, like, near to hand political society and develop a real relationship with that. And so instead they develop all these like sort of parasocial relationships, you might say, with above all Soviet Russia, but also there's a number of pro-Hitler intellectuals and, you know,
pro-Celtic, or like, he has a lot of different targets, you know?
Yeah. And he says, one point that jumped out to me is that, yeah. So instability, quote, the intensity with which they are held does not prevent nationalist loyalties from being transferable. To begin with, as I have pointed out already, they can be and often are fastened upon some foreign country. One quite commonly finds that great national leaders or the founders of nationalist movements do not even belong to the country they have glorified. Sometimes they are outright foreigners, or more often they come from peripheral areas where nationality is doubtful. Examples are Stalin, Hitler, Napoleon, De Valera, Disraeli, Poincaré, Beaverbrook. Stalin, Hitler, Napoleon, it's just the central casting, somebody whose identity is unstable and doesn't have an organic relationship with their sort of like nearby country, as it were. And so it develops like an overcompensating attachment to some place that they don't really actually belong to per se.
I mean, let's give the obvious example from today. And a lot of this has to do, of course, with, for political representatives, lobbyist funding. But like, think John Fetterman and his, like, you know, he's not a Jew, but he's got an obsession with Zionism, right? You could say so does Joe Biden, who's also not Jewish, but evangelical Christians writ large, especially ones that are politically motivated in a reactionary way, are essentially proponents of Zionism. And we can see how that redounds to the inability to admit atrocities going on right now. Orwell gets into that. There's some choice lines that I think you could say apply directly to that situation.
Yeah. Let me read
these are transferred identities, right? This is, you know, this is a clear example where you can't think of something almost that is supposed to be more exclusionary than Zionism. I mean, this is like a project that's all about, right, Jewish identity as the ends to which the project is devoted. And of course, you have so many Jews who are non-Zionist, and we can get into that, right? But like, the fact that some people who are Gentiles, non-Jews, that they care so much about the Zionist project, that is weird. And this kind of explains that a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Let me read a little bit more here. Quote, but for an intellectual, transference has an important function, which I have already mentioned shortly in connection with Chesterton. It makes it possible for him to be much more nationalistic, more vulgar, more silly, more malignant, more dishonest than he ever could be on behalf of his native country or any unit of which he had real knowledge. When one sees the slavish or boastful rubbish that is written about Stalin, the Red Army, etc., by fairly intelligent and sensitive people, one realizes that this is only possible because some kind of dislocation has taken place. In society such as ours, it is unusual for anyone describable as an intellectual to feel a very deep attachment to his own country. Public opinion, that is, the section of public opinion of which he, as an intellectual, is aware, will not allow him to do so. Most of the people surrounding him are skeptical and disaffected, and he may adopt the same attitude from imitativeness or sheer cowardice. In that case, he will have abandoned the form of nationalism that lies nearest to hand without getting any closer to a genuinely internationalist outlook. He still feels the need for a fatherland, and it is natural to look for one somewhere abroad. Having found it, he can wallow unrestrainedly in exactly those emotions from which he believes that he has emancipated himself. God, the king, the empire, the Union Jack, all the overthrown idols can reappear under different names, and because they are not recognized for what they are, they can be worshipped worshipped with a good conscience. Transferred nationalism, like the use of scapegoats, is a way of attaining salvation without altering one's conduct. I thought that was so good.
That's great. That's good stuff.
Perfect. That's the end of the preview, folks. As usual, we like to mention that this podcast is sponsored by the American Prospect magazine. So if you want to listen to the whole thing, you can subscribe at $5 a month. If you want that plus a free subscription to the website, plus the opportunity for a steeply discounted print subscription, you can do that if you so wish at $10 a month. And otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.